24, 1997. We are again with Dr. Walter Jacob. This is tape 16, side 34. I will be the interviewer. My name is Gabrielle Denman. Mary Harrison is the recorder. And Rabbi Jacob, we're happy to see you.
It's good to be here with you.
Great.
Side two.
All right, Rabbi Jacob, at our last session, we stopped the week before the symposium that was here in your honor, which, besides honoring you, also included the installation of Walter Homolka to become the first post-war Reform Rabbi of Germany. Am I correct?
It's a little bit different than that.
Okay, you tell us, and tell us about the symposium, please.
Okay. The symposium was planned by, I think it was Irene's idea, together with my late brother, and they then asked Rabbi Stateman and Rabbi Noble of Evanston whether they were interested in doing something like that, and both of them were, and gathered a remarkable group of people to present papers. I felt most humbled by that.
Did the symposium have a title?
It was called An American Rabbinate, and what it tried to do was have papers presented in each of the major areas that interest me, or in which I've done some work. So there was Gunther Plaut, who dealt with my interest in my late grandfather. There was Dr. Cook, who presented a paper which dealt both with Judaism and Christianity and with art, both of which are his interests too. Dr. Wachowski on Halacha, Peter Noble, also on a halachic issue. Who else? I'll have to look at the list again to remind myself of who else. Dr. Homolka, of course, who presented something on a paper on German Jewish thought and philosophy. And there were a whole series of individuals who responded as well. Dr. Stateman presented a sort of an overview of what I've done, including interests in both social action and special education, like the establishment of Horizon Homes, which certainly took a lot of time from both Irene and me. And of course, in the middle of the symposium, one of the highlights was Irene, who presented a paper on the garden. And after all, gardening has been a major interest of both of us for a long time. With her, they could not find an appropriate respondent because there is nobody in Pittsburgh who was able to deal with the long history and the development of papyrus, which was her theme. With the others, they found respondents who included my colleagues, Rabbi Bush and Rabbi Pine, as well as Rabbi Schiff, it was very, very nice. It was a great honor to have that presented, and the papers will be published. Let's deal with the ordination, and it was not the installation, it was the ordination of Walter Homolka.
What's the difference?
Well, ordination makes you a rabbi. Installation puts you in a certain place. Was something unusual and something that I should add that Rabbi Zemmer, Dr. Zemmer, also presented a paper on halacha. He's from Israel, so there were people from the United States, from Europe, and from Israel.
And Dr. Klaus from Canada, isn't he?
Yes, he's from Canada.
And he's still living?
Yes. So we had a lot of different nationalities represented. Walter Homolka, whom I've talked about a number of times, is a most unusual individual. He studied at the Riobeck Institute. That was a decade ago. He did not quite finish their course of study and lacked some credentials in counseling and that sort of thing. So for that reason, they were willing to recommend his ordination, but were unwilling to do it themselves because they want to demand those courses of their current students. So at the recommendation of the Leo Beck seminar in London, three of us, Rabbi Zemmer of Israel, Rabbi Podet, who had taught him at the Leo Beck College, and myself, ordained him. And that was not connected with the Institute, with this symposium, but followed immediately thereafter as everybody was present. And that was a very festive moment. We kept it private because it is the sort of thing that's much more personal. And after all, Dr. Homolka really didn't know anybody in Pittsburgh. So that other people who would have come would just have been people and not people.
Did his family come?
They did not, no.
May I ask you, I guess we'll have to ask that for statement. Do you think there's a copy available of his presentation?
They will all be printed.
Yeah. Because I think we'd like to have that.
So that's, they will be printed within a year. So just be patient.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about this person?
No, it was extremely festive and how many people came? About between 100 and 150 people came to the various sessions. It was extended over a day and a half.
Now, my next question was going to be about your visit to Germany, but that's my... I'm going to ask you something first, in between. I see all kinds of ketubim. Will this be part of an exhibit? Or where are they from? Tell us about it.
You know, one of the things that I've involved with and started is the Associated American Jewish Museums. So the current exhibit is an exhibit called Synagogues Around the World. There are actually two exhibits. One consists of 80 photographs and the other of 20 photographs for synagogues with less space. And that has circulated now for 2.5 years. These are photographs by Burton Hirsch, and who is an excellent photographer, and they are quite large. And I've provided an explanatory text and other explanatory material about the nature of the synagogue and its development. And that has gone by now to about a dozen, maybe slightly more, synagogues all across the country. The next exhibit, which will start here during the holidays, then circulate in a similar fashion, consists of 30 modern ketubot, modern wedding documents, done by 30 different artists from the United States, Israel, and Canada. And it is hoped that this will go in two directions. One is, it will provide a way of showing the American public, American synagogue-going public, the wide variety of ketubot which exists, and encourage people to commission something like that. And when people spend thousands of dollars on weddings, there ought to be something left afterwards besides a photographic record. So these are beautiful, can be hung, and are really works of art. And they vary in price from couple of $100 to a few $1,000s.
Now, will they be on sale?
They will not be on sale, but the artist will benefit from this by having their name out there, and people can then contact them and say, I like your work, what can you do for me?
Never seen a cutout one.
Yes, now that's quite complex.
Yeah. And I noticed you have several I went through.
Yeah, oh yeah, there. And I think this is going to be a very nice exhibit. It's going to be, well, it's already been booked through almost all of 98. And I'm now dealing with 99. So that's the third exhibit. These exhibits are entirely free. All people pay is the shipping charge. And that is not much because these are not put into wooden crates. They're just put in the cardboard boxes. So the last exhibit, which consists of sending 6 cardboard boxes to Chicago, cost them up there about $100. So for $100, they had a complete exhibit. There are 2 more exhibits planned after that, which are just in the initial planning stages. But I'm sure they will go well, too. One of them will try to expose the Jewish public and synagogues to the variety of Jewish museums which exist in Europe. Most people are unaware of what is there except for 1 or 2 museums. I'm going to get displays from them which can be circulated and try to help in that direction. We may then later on do the same thing with the American Jewish Museums, because the number of people who visit remains quite small. And then, of course, an additional exhibit, which is probably 2 years, maybe even 3 years down the road, and I think I've mentioned that before, will deal with Western Pennsylvania small town synagogues to show what has happened and to show what architectural development there was in these little communities, and to encourage other major cities to do the same thing for their satellite towns. Because here we have approximately 60 towns within a 100 or 150 mile radius, which once had synagogues.
Would you computerize any of this? I think you were at that lecture. Hit a few months ago, the fellow professor from Israel.
Narcus, well.
Has everything on the computer?
Well, what we intend to do is provide him with the data. First of all, with photographs.
Yes.
Secondly, with measurements. Now, he has a specific way in which he would like that done. But as he doesn't answer his correspondence, he'll simply have to take it the way we present it. The material will also go to the Architectural Archive at the Carnegie and to the Western Pennsylvania Historical Society, and probably also to the American Jewish Archives. So once it's been, and hopefully a little book will come out of this too. So once this has been done, it should present a permanent record. And as you know, we're going to have a symposium to kick this off in 10 days on a Sunday morning, which will deal with small town synagogue with three speakers.
For the tape, would you say one sentence about Professor Narcus and his work?
Professor Narcus, who is associated with the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, is trying to put together an archive which will replicate to some extent the archive of Christian art at Princeton University. So that has recorded by now about 250,000 churches and monuments, as well as works, Christian works of art. So he wants to do the same thing for Jewish works of art. He has done this reasonably well, I believe, in Israel, has made a start in Eastern Europe by sending groups in to see synagogues which either survived or survived in ruins or altered for some other use, and has chosen Pittsburgh as a pilot project for recording synagogue objects. Now, he was quite interested when I told him about this Western Pennsylvania project. But like many Israelis, he simply doesn't answer his mail. So that's all right. I'm in no way dependent on him. If anything, he's dependent on me. We'll simply move ahead on our own. And if he wants other data, he's welcome to come over and get it himself. Should say a word more about the Associated Museums. It's going very nicely in its rebirth, which is just 2 years old, 3 years old. We've gotten about 45 synagogue members across the country and are getting new ones all the time.
As a result of the museum?
As a result of the exhibits. And as a result of a little newsletter which tries to make people aware of what's going on in the Jewish world of art and craft.
May I ask where the funding is coming from? Could you be able to be?
Well, this is run on virtually no funding. If you do the work yourself, it doesn't cost anything. So aside from a minor amount for postage and a little paper, that's it.
The recipient pays the postage.
Well,
shipping.
That kind of shipping, yes. But when we send out a newsletter, there's a minimum dues for this organization, $25 per year.
Oh.
So, you know, that isn't going to provide any tremendous sum of money. But it takes care of these minor incidentals.
One more question before we get to your trip to Germany. In your other office, in your other study, there were lots of Torah up there on the top shelf.
There was one fragment of the Torah, that's all.
Didn't we see many Torahs?
No,
there was a Torah that you talked about.
You need new glasses.
Well, that's possible.
It was up very high, and then a couple of days later, we were going to ask you about it. Then it disappeared in your mind.
What happened to that fragment?
What was it? That fragment was discovered by an antique dealer in an antique shop.
Yeah.
It is a fragment on goatskin of a Moroccan Torah. And rather than simply hiding it away or burying it, I framed it, and it is currently on exhibit downstairs as part of the papyrus, the paper exhibit. So if you wander through that, you'll see it.
Thank you very much. Okay, now, after the symposium, you and Irene went to Germany, am I right?
Correct.
And tell us.
Well, this was, again, a very interesting trip. Which took me to Munich and to some other cities nearby, also to Frankfurt. Two major events happened. One was that Dr. Walter Homolka, was installed as rabbi of the Munich congregation. So now they have two rabbis, one in residence and one in the United States. I act in an advisory capacity and try to be helpful from a distance as well as close up. This was a wonderful ceremony. The quarters in which they meet, they don't have their own synagogue, but they rent quarters, were somewhat enlarged for them. But even at that, they seat only 200 people. 300 people attended. So we had to televise the proceedings into a neighboring room, neighboring large room. People came from all over Germany. There were people from Berlin, from Hamburg, from Frankfurt, lots of other cities, Vienna, to participate in this. There were letters of congratulation from leading figures in Germany, Ubis, who is the head of the German Jewish community, the theologian Hans Kuhn, and a whole set of others, and of course the various religious groups as well as the mayor's office were represented at the ceremonies themselves, as were individuals from other countries in the World Union. What made this such a big event was that this is really the first Reform rabbi, young Reform rabbi, who has been installed in Germany since the Second World War. We've had a couple of individuals who served the general community in the 50s and continued to serve after that, but they were not serving as liberal rabbis. They were serving as rabbis of a united Einheitsgemeinde, is what it's called in German. So this was a very festive occasion, and I had the honor of doing the installation itself. There were two other rabbis who participated, Rabbi Jacoby from England, and Rabbi Codette from North America. So it was, again, a major event, not only in the life of that congregation, but also of the German Jewish community. Dr. Homolka will continue his present position, which is in publishing, but he has lots of energy and is willing to not count hours. So he will do a tremendous amount for this congregation.
What's the name of the congregation? The
congregation is called Beth Shalom. It's interesting for this reason, that most congregations, and I mentioned that to them on another occasion, most congregations, when they are called Shalom, it means that they have had a series of arguments and now want peace. This congregation has not had any strife, so it is preparing itself, I suppose. The other occasion celebrated at the same time was the formation of a union of progressive, liberal, reform, whatever you want to call them, congregations in Germany. And at that initial meeting, there were, much to my surprise, 10 congregations that joined, which I believe is more, or I'd have to look that up, or about the same as formed the Union of American Hebrew Congregations in the last century here in this country. So this means that we now speak with a united voice, and that's one thing that's important when we represent ourselves to the rest of the Jewish community and the broader public. Secondly, it means that we have a ready method for exchanging information so that we won't duplicate efforts, and for placing rabbis, cantors, educators, Torahs. One of the things I intended to do was take a Torah with me. At the last minute, I decided not to because, you know, before you said I went directly to Germany, actually I didn't. I went to before going to Germany, I gave a lecture in Portland, and then went to Springfield, Missouri, and Kansas City, and then to Miami for various meetings and the like. And in Miami, I discovered that some people had had trouble with customs, German customs. And that depends on who you get at the other end. So rather than spending several hours at the airport, I decided we would ship the Torah, but this group will also place Torahs. So as I find them, they will put them in the appropriate congregations.
And what kind of leaders do the other 9 congregations in Germany have? Lay leaders?
They have lay leaders. They have one or two of them have a teacher. Two of them will be served by student rabbis who are beginning their studies at the Leo Baeck School in London, who will come in on a regular basis. And they vary in size from 300 or 400 families to just 20 or so families. And in fact, we had one group which has not yet joined us, but asked for help, is a group entirely composed of Russians who know very little about Judaism, but are interested in learning, have absolutely no money for anything. So we will send them a teacher and try to put them on their feet and try to get them going. In a small town in Germany.
Where are the funds coming from for this type of education?
All of this is generated locally.
It is generated.
Not only locally, but on a voluntary basis. We, thus far, are not receiving any government funds to which we are entitled.
Okay.
So, for example, this congregation in Munich has set as its dues, I believe, 1,000 marks per family. And that's, you know, far more than any other Jew in the city is going to pay to his congregation, because they all pay taxes, and these people pay taxes too.
They get 1,000 marks?
Yes.
Per family or
per? Per family.
Okay. Would you explain for the tape, because I think that's interesting, and I don't think too many Americans know that there is a religious tax.
Everybody,
is there a religious tax in Germany? Or?
There always has been, or I can't say always, but certainly since the unification of Germany in the last century, and probably before that in various segments of Germany. What happens is that a small percentage is added to your income tax, and it goes either to the Roman Catholic Church, the Lutheran Church, or to the Jewish community. I don't believe any other religious groups are currently recognized. That may not be so. And if you don't want to pay that tax, you have to opt out of that community. So although our people do not want to pay the tax to the Orthodox, they certainly do not want to declare officially that they are no longer Jews. So what we're doing is going to the community, and for the first time, because we've shown enough strength and vigor, instead of ignoring us, they are saying, let's talk, because they know that if they continue to ignore us, we will simply go to the government and say, this is our due. How do you want us to proceed? Do we proceed through administratively, or do you want us to proceed through a court action? And we're quite willing to go down either direction. So this group in Munich and others in the neighborhood are going to move. Now, the third thing that was important that weekend was that Dr. Homolka announced, and I've had a very small part in this, that we will have, by the holidays, a complete prayer book, not only daily services, Shabbat services, services for all the holidays, but also for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, a two-volume prayer book, not published like the little booklet I showed you in three languages. This will be German and Hebrew. And a young woman has devoted a year, really, of her life to translating from the Hebrew into good, poetic, modern German. The whole thing has been beautifully typeset, and I saw mock-ups of the volume. Volumes, or the two volumes, they look just grand. And that entire effort will have been done in slightly less than a year, starting from nothing.
That's amazing. From the Hebrew text? Or did they use the Union Prayer?
No.
Book?
No, they used the Hebrew text of an English prayer book. But everything had to be arranged, translated, typeset, And there it is within a year, which I think is remarkable. And what that does is, there were, of course, prayer books in Germany before the Second World War, but not a united prayer book for all the Reformed congregations. So that presented a problem. Secondly, they were all, I think all, or almost all, the German was printed in Gothic type, which presents a real problem for the modern German. And third, the language has changed. And so none of those books, even if you could have republished them, were usable. The Swiss have gone on this path and have already 2 years ago announced that they were in the process of doing something like this. But they're so slow that we simply went ahead and said, look, by the time we are ready for the second edition, you may have your book out. But absolutely nothing has happened to theirs. And I know the Dutch